Welcome to the Landlord Diaries, where we talk about midterm rentals and the opportunities behind them. We'll share landlord stories, talk about maximizing investment potential, and discuss how to live the very best landlord life. This podcast is proudly brought to you by Furnished Finder, the leader and largest online marketplace for midterm rentals. Remember to like and subscribe if you enjoy our content.
Are you feeling lucky, my friend? Today we are traveling to Las Vegas. It's your host team of the Landlord Diaries, Kelly Bailey and Katie Lyon, coming to you from the Furnished Finder marketing team. And Katie, what great advice do we have today?
Well, today we talk with Jason, and Jason has a portfolio of rental properties in the Las Vegas area. And he has one property that's really like his shining star, and he pulls in like $30,000 a month with it. And what we really get to learn with him is his strategies for mixing short-term and midterm, which is so perfect for the market he's in. And something we get questions about a lot is, okay, I also want to rent this short-term. How do I combine both, right? How do I make it a short-term and a midterm? So we really get into the nitty-gritty. We answer, you know, how do you balance that stuff? How do you make sure you're maximizing revenue? What about the furnishings and the services? So it's a good one, especially if you are interested in larger properties or the potential of larger properties. So please enjoy this. And just a reminder to please subscribe and comment and share this podcast if you find it helpful.
Jason Griggs is a gym teacher turned real estate tycoon known as the go-to guy in Las Vegas for both short-term or midterm rentals, with one specific luxury property, the San Gabriel, that rents for $30,000 to $50,000 monthly. Jason is a realtor and property manager at Simply Vegas. He also owns Griggs Vacation Rentals. Jason, thanks for being with us today. How is it in Vegas?
I appreciate you having me on, Kelly. Vegas is great.
While we're going to focus the episode on finding or creating the diamond in the rough property through short-term and midterm rentals, first, let's make sure and establish, you know, who are you, Jason? Tell us about your experience in real estate and what led you to become a realtor and property investor manager.
So my name is Jason Griggs. I'm from Long Island, New York. I'm not from here in Las Vegas. And I came out here on vacation and I never left. I came here in 2012. Pretty unique story. I loved coming here to visit my buddy. And I just had a really cool, unique vacation experience. And I just loved the town. And I ended up becoming, I graduated from college and I became a phys ed teacher. And sweet. I didn't like teaching, and I was coaching a lacrosse at a local high school here in Henderson. And one of the parents gave me an opportunity to get my real estate license. And so I was calling back home all my friends and family and telling them how little the real estate cost. And we just started buying rental properties, and it kind of snowballed from there.
That's awesome. We talk a lot on the show about relationships and it sounds like you were in a job you didn't love, but it was a parent on the lacrosse team that helped get you started in real estate.
Yeah, it is.
That's cool.
One of my mentors, Tim Cups is his name, and I was coaching his son, and we kind of had this deal. I was like, if you teach me real estate, I'll help you with lacrosse. And it was a big win-win.
Awesome.
That's awesome. So Jason, tell us how your portfolio has grown now and kind of which strategies you use for which, you know, all your different properties. And do you own them all? Do you manage? Do you co-host? What's your setup look like?
So I own my entire portfolio. I do have partners with different properties, but I feel strongly that Henderson is one of the best rental markets in the entire country, both for long-term and short-term, midterm. And I just started buying long-term rentals. And as it progressed, I realized a lot of people were coming here to visit before they wanted to buy. And so I would offer midterm rentals to them, say, hey, you could stay here a month, 2 months. And then that kind of snowballed into building short-term rentals. And now it's become, I got to build out the biggest, baddest Airbnb properties to host these people coming to visit on vacation.
So how many properties in total do you have then? And let's talk about how many do you use for midterm specifically or in conjunction with short term?
So in Vegas, I have 12 total that I flex between midterm and short term. And it's crazy because I just create a good product and then I put it out there for the marketing and I never know what's going to come from it. So I can get people, a poker player who wants to come here for 6 months versus an athlete who wants to come here for a week. And I just created the product and then I let the marketing just kind of boom and see what happens.
That's awesome. And let's talk about kind of your highlight property, which you call the San Gabriel. Tell us about that property, because I think that's kind of like your gem or your outperformer, right?
Yes, it is my gem for sure. So I'm a big UFC fan, and a lot of my friends were on the reality TV show, The Ultimate Fighter. And I saw this property, it's 9,000 square feet. There's two homes on the plot of land. And it just screamed out mega Airbnb compound. And so I bought this, and as I was building it and I finished it, I got contacted by Dana White and his team that they wanted to film their reality TV show in the home. So before I could even release it on Airbnb, he grabbed it and put it on TV. And it's been an awesome relationship with them. And so I kind of flexed that back and forth. I let them use it for their filming purposes. And then I rent it out on the side when it's not being filmed in.
Awesome. How often does filming occur?
So the first year was like 8 months out of the first year.
Wow.
Yeah, they were in there a lot. And it was a little stressful, but it got a lot of publicity, which was amazing. There's a lot of famous athletes that stay in it now. And then it's just a big win-win.
So now you rent it partially as a short-term rental and then partially as a midterm rental. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And tell us kind of your strategy behind that split and when you decide, you know, what makes the difference between when you're going to rent it as a short-term and when you're going to rent it as a midterm? Because I know a lot of our midterm rental property owners, you know, want to do that kind of flex strategy, but they might have a hard time kind of deciding when to flip over or how to kind of manage that strategy there.
So it's all about the business, right? If you have an inquiry for a midterm rental for 3 to 5 months, I'll take that. But the hard part is if it's booked already as a short-term rental, you can't cancel. So there is a gap that you have to kind of, a fine line you got to kind of waver around. But it's just all about the inquiries for me. Whenever business comes towards the house, then I will rent it to whoever wants to use it.
Hey guys, Katie here. I'm so sorry I'm interrupting our interview because I want to talk more about this just for a quick second. Jason talks about when travelers contact him about his property, he communicates back to them if it's available for a midterm stay. Now, I want everybody to remember that on Furnished Finder, leads and housing requests are not the only way that you might get contacted by a traveler. You can also get contacted by text or email, or someone might pick up the phone, even in 2024, might pick up the phone and call you. I know as a landlord, I get these calls all of the time. So it's really, really important to not only be checking your dashboard for leads and housing requests, but also to be answering your phone, checking your email, and making sure that your property listing is up to date, including your contact information. So make sure you get that up to date there.
So you're not necessarily turning it over and saying, okay, from these months to these months, we're going to do midterm. And from this season, we're going to do short term. You're just kind of open to whatever comes your way and really marketed towards these athletes or productions that might be more inclined to need a property for a longer period of time. Is that correct?
That's correct. So I'll open the calendar, and if somebody says, I need these 3 months, I'll block those three. And then I'll try and fill in the gaps I know some people don't like doing it like that, but I've had nothing but success just showing like, look, this is the year. And if you want to for a month, this is the price, and for 2 months, et cetera.
Okay, great. So let's dig into a little bit of how you've created an experience, because I think that is one way that you've attracted, especially these midterm rental guests, is right, like by making it kind of the perfect house for what they're looking for a little bit more of an extended stay. Can you tell us more about what you've done to the property or the land really to make it something where it draws people in for these 3 months or longer stays?
So all of Las Vegas is about experience. If you go to any hotel, they want you to come to their hotel and stay in their hotel. They don't want you wandering around. So I kind of copied that model. And when people come to San Gabriel, everything's in there for them. It's a secluded property. It's a little off the path in Henderson. So it's 15, 20 minutes away from the strip, but it has a gym in there, beach volleyball court, pool, sauna, anything that you could think of that a chef can come, gym trainer, yoga trainer, we could do the laundry, anything that you will need is there. And so athletes like that, because they don't want to be traveling all around and they kind of want to be private. And I realized that after working with a few of them. And so that's what we built and it's working.
And I don't think you said the size yet. It's 92,000 square feet, 7 bedrooms, sleeps about 16.
Whoa, 9,200, right? Not 92,000.
Oh, did I say 92,000? Whoops.
Yep. I was like, dang, that'd be huge. 9,200, that's correct.
Thanks for that catch, Katie. 9,200. And you said it's split between two homes?
Yeah, so we have two homes on the property. There's a main home that's 7,000 square feet, and then the second one's about 2,000 square feet. And so it's great because let's say you have a lot of athletes, they have a nanny or someone there watches their kids, or maybe even family members you don't really like. You could put them in the second home, which is not too far, but it's away. And that's what really attracted us on the property.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Do you ever rent them out separate or they're always rented together?
No, we're not allowed to do that. So since we have a license on that property, you have to rent it as one home.
Okay, nice.
So let's sidestep just for a second here, Kelly. I'm going to go rogue here just for a second, because I know Las Vegas formal does have a lot of short-term rental restrictions, correct? Now you're in Henderson. What kind of restrictions do you need to manage? And how does flexing to the midterm space kind of help you with that?
Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Furnished Finder, the ultimate platform for hassle-free midterm rentals. Whether you're a seasoned landlord or just getting started, Furnished Finder has everything you need to find your next tenant. With Furnished Finder, you can say goodbye to booking fees, markups, and commissions, and hello to direct bookings. If you're ready to experience all the benefits renting your property for 30 days or more, head over to furnishedfinder.com where you can list your property for one low annual price. We make it easy to get started.
So I like the rules in Henderson. I think they're very fair. The city of Las Vegas has not officially put their stamp on the rules, but basically every house has a license that's an Airbnb or short-term rental. And then there's a map around that property that another home can't short-term rental their home within 1,000 square feet. So the market doesn't get saturated. And so San Gabriel is the biggest one in all of Henderson. So if somebody wants a really big house, I have the biggest one. To answer your question about the midterm, if somebody wants the biggest furnished rental in all of Henderson, I have it. And people like the fact that it's licensed and it's ran by somebody that does it professionally rather than a lot of operators don't really do it full time.
Right.
And Henderson is how close to like Vegas?
10 minutes?
It's five minutes. It's right there.
Okay, great.
All right, guys, this is Katie again. I just had to add one more thing into this conversation. Short-term rental regulations are changing all the time in cities all over the country. And just remember that with midterm rentals, more often than not, you bypass those restrictions, right? By hitting a 30-day minimum, you typically put yourself in the category of long-term rentals in the eyes of regulators and policyholders and things of that nature. So it's always such a good option to do if your city that your property is in or that you're looking to invest in does something similar to Las Vegas, where they say, we're either not going to have short-term rentals or we're going to put some really, really heavy restrictions on it.
So one of the things that a lot of our guests, you know, kind of have a fear about is larger properties. We get a lot of hesitation on, but you know, the furniture is so expensive. Will a larger property work as a midterm rental? So what's been the pros and cons or the challenges of having a larger property for short-term and midterm rental? And how do you choose the right one?
Well, it was risky for us. And I can understand why it's scary. It was scary because we're buying a $1.4 million home and we don't know if we're going to get the license and we don't know we're the new biggest kid in town and is it going to rent? So yeah, there's a big risk factor because the mortgage is really expensive and if you don't rent it, then what? So yeah, it was a big learning experience, but the reason why we bought it was because we knew we could get the license on it. I would not go buy a big luxury house in a saturated market. So it was really calculated. It was a big calculated real estate purchase.
I think this also brings up a couple of things to note as well, right? Just because Las Vegas has really heavy restrictions, you found a way to really serve that market without being in Las Vegas proper. So I think that's important. I know in Denver, restrictions are very tight. So a lot of people will go to the surrounding suburbs that are convenient, and then they could have a really successful STR / MTR hybrid in one of those suburbs, developments, whatever you want to call them. The other thing that I like that you've done is that you took on the risk, but you really had your target tenant in the back of your mind or the front of your mind the entire time, right? You were like, I know that there are athletes that are coming here for 6 months. I know that there's poker players that need to be here for 12 weeks, whatever yep. It is. Like, I know that there is this need, which is a little specific to Vegas, right? Like, there's not poker players going to Omaha, Nebraska for 12 weeks.
So true.
But the budgets, you know, for these types of people are higher and they're looking for a little bit more, well, not a little bit, a lot more of a luxury experience. And it's a little bit of a unique market so that can serve it. And I think the way you can apply that to, you know, other markets, because Vegas is a little bit of a niche. Like, let's say you're in Omaha, right? Is the average age of properties like 80, 90 years? You might have more fires or more damage where there might be higher insurance claims, right? So I think it kind of always goes back to who are you trying to serve and how do you find the demand for that, even if it's kind of more investigative work than it is data work.
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying, the best businesses are the ones that solve problems. And we have a big rental market, like, boom right now. There's no luxury rentals right now. And if there are, the product stinks. And so that's what I'm going in now. I'm going all in the luxury rental because everyone is moving to Las Vegas. People are leaving Hollywood, people leaving Arizona, New York, Florida. It's just too expensive. And so I'm taking advantage of that where there's a lot of famous people with money that just don't care and they want a nice house for their family and they're willing to spend it. So why not take advantage?
Yeah, for sure. And I think you're making a very good point there. It's like, what makes something a luxury property and how do you market a luxury property successfully, which we know you have definitely done since it's renting for between $30,000 to $50,000 monthly.
So what I've learned is that these people who are renting it, they want to be left alone. And in hotels, they're not left alone. If they want to go to the gym, they're going to get seen. If they want to go get a cup of coffee, they're going to get seen, the pictures, the selfies, all these things. but I'll touch on something that I've learned. I'm really easy to work with. So when these reps call me and they're like, hey, this guy's coming in, he likes to be left alone, I write out an email of how to work everything. Here's the code. Go in the home. Use it. If there's any issues, call me. You're not going to see me. Maybe you'll see a tech of mine that will come fix something, but you'll be left alone. And there's only one neighbor, and it's quiet, and you could do whatever you got to do. And people love that. And nice. I think a lot of operators and hosts in this business, they get too over-involved. They write out too many rules. You can't do this. You can't do that. And that turns people off.
I think that adds up a lot of, you know, the midterm rental tenants, they want to settle in. They want to make a home. They want to really live there, not just visit there, right? So they want to get settled in. They want to untuck the sheets and just, you know, go about their business and live kind of the way that they would live wherever they are. They're not on a vacation. So it does make a really big difference. So
no, to your point, what I've experienced in the midterm rental stuff, when people come to my homes, they're like, wow, this is way nicer than my home. And I'm like, oh, well, that's cool for them because they're going through a distress of something. And so they feel like their life is upgrading after they just got crushed with something that went bad for them. So now they're in an upgrading moment for a time frame, and that kind of uplifts them, and it's just a win-win.
Now, when you're talking about those types of tenants, are you talking about like insurance placements that you might have hosted, or just kind of people who are relocating for different reasons, or
both? Okay. But yeah, all my insurance claims with the midterm, yes, that's definitely happened a lot. But even like I get a lot when people come to my homes because I really do a good job of my product, where I'm like, I want these people to feel like they're going to the Wynn or the Encore, where it's like beautiful, it's clean, it's fresh, and it's just this experienced home with a nice pool, backyard, nice weather. And so that's how I build them out.
All right. So talk to us about leads you've gotten from Furnish Finder, how those have panned out for you, for not only for your San Gabriel, which is your like super high end, you know, $30,000 a month property, but for your other 11 properties as well.
I've had nothing but great things with Furnish Finder. I've rented St. Gabriel to someone for a month. It was a tech executive that he wanted to test out Las Vegas to see if he liked it. And the lead came through and I met him and he loved the house. He rented it for a month. But and I've rented a lot of my other ones. 2-3 months at a time. Even I had it 6 months on my scenic property. So the best part about the Furnish Finder, it's just the marketing. They really help your properties get out there. And that's what these websites are. And if you have a great product and great pictures and you stand behind it, websites like Furnish Finder and the other marketing websites will help your properties.
Hey, landlords, are you ready to level up your rental game and simplify your midterm rental business? Well, get ready to meet your new best friend, KeyCheck. KeyCheck is your all-in-one solution for stress-free property management. With tenant-paid screenings, online rent payment processing, custom lease creation, and a suite of incredible landlord tools, you'll wonder how you ever lived without it. No more chasing down checks or sifting through piles of applications. KeyCheck helps you organize and manage all things landlording in a simple and efficient way. Make landlord life a breeze with KeyCheck, the game changer for modern property owners. Visit KeyCheck.com to unlock the power of stress-free property management and take your rental business to new heights.
You actually, on a different conversation, you made a really good point that with your typical OTA, they're holding your money until the guest checks in, and cancellations are possible. But with Furnish Finder, we're not your typical OTA, and you set your own terms, and we're just a site to generate leads to your property. So you'll get the, you know, deposit and the move-in fees and have the lease in place to secure that booking. Typically, I like to do it within, you know, 3 days of, hey, let's sign the lease and make sure and pay all these all the move-in fees within 3 days of signing the lease. So you already have that money up front that now you can potentially, of course, save it, but now you have it to use for other property investment type decisions as well.
Well, I think Furnish Finder is like a good referee, the sports analogy. They really weed out people who are not serious. And I've never had an issue with anyone who's used Furnish Finder. When I get an email that pops up, I'm like, okay, this is a serious person. They're not going to waste my time. They're going to take good care of my home.
Do you have any other San Gabriel type properties, or is this your main, you know, squeeze?
That's my biggest one. I do have a tier two that's 5,000 square feet. Very well too. It's called Davis Wright, but that one will do probably 22,000 to 28,000 a month. And we booked that out 300 days at a 365 last year, which was pretty impressive.
That's awesome. So talk to us, Jason, about some tips that you can give other landlords about when they're looking at a property. What are some things for them to consider to know that this might be a good short-term, mid-term rental hybrid?
All right. So when you go into a property, like, it needs to have a wow factor involved in it, because I see a lot of there's a million of these now, so everyone looks the same. There's no decoration. The furniture's cheap. So when I look at a house, I look at the backyard, and I'm like, okay, like, are people going to be wowed by this backyard? Are they going to want to rent this with their friends and family and have a good time in this house? And if it's yes, then we could build off that. And if it's not, it's not going to work. The second thing is the location, because if you have a nice house in the middle of nowhere, then it's not going to rent. No one's going to drive 45 minutes from Boulder City to Las Vegas Strip. They'll drive 15, 20, but not 45, 50 minutes. So the location and the proximity of things, very important. So with those two things, that's the two most important things that I see a lot of people kind of waver off a little bit, and then they complain, oh, my house isn't getting booked. And I'm like, well, does it have a wow factor, and what's the location to it?
I think that's really important too, because the location you can never change. We actually, our latest purchase was a house that, or it's a townhouse, but it's very underwhelming when you're touring it. We're like, okay, we're going to need to replace the oven and the microwave and the windows and, you know, the doors, like all pretty much everything that like you can do without ripping out a wall. We're like, okay, we're going to need to do new light fixtures, new door handles, all this. That's easy to do, right? But what I can't change is the fact that it's so, so conveniently located, right? That location is amazing. The proximity to the stuff around it is awesome. Now, that is something that you either buy or you don't buy, but the wow factor is something that you can add, right? And I think I like your concept of just being able to differentiate yourself and stand out a little bit, whether it's with furnishings or whether it's with, you know, services, whether it's with hospitality, however it is, or hopefully it's a combination of all those things, right? Like finding a way to really stand out in the marketplace, because midterm is becoming a bigger sector of real estate investing.
It is.
And I think it's important that you stand out however you want. Like Kelly stands out in her properties, not by being the most expensive or highest end properties, but she provides like this down to earth, very relatable service. She's always close to like dog parks and hiking trails. And you know that like if you stay at Kelly's property, you're going to be very like comfortable and well taken care of. So I think it, I think it's
finally
really important
somebody that expresses my my enjoyment for looking at the backyard photos. I always have to scroll through Zillow. Like, I'm like, get to the backyard.
Like, where is it?
I don't care about all this yet.
I just think it's something that you have something that everyone can take away from, right? Like, what is your property bragging about? What do you have that's different, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the market competing against hotels. So you have the upper echelon, the Wynns, and the Bellagios, and you have to look at what they're doing and just copy it. Like the Bellagio, they are constantly, they remodel their lobby. So it's Christmas time, the nice decorations. That's why people stay there, because it's beautiful and it smells good. So you're kind of emulating what the hotels are doing. And if you're not like in with the times, then your business is going to fail.
Yeah, those are good points.
All right. So your goal is to double your mortgage any way you can. How has this been a realistic goal for all of your properties? And how has midterms kind of helped you to achieve that?
It's very realistic. But first, you have to get in good on the buy and the real estate part. I see that is a big issue with a lot of people right now. Rates are really expensive. Mortgages are really expensive. So you have to be careful. You have to be smart of, does the real estate investment make sense? And so mine have done extremely well because I have low interest rates on a lot of these properties. And now I use creative finance to kind of restructure the deals to make sure it works. But this business is really math. Like, you have your mortgage. You can't change that. And so it's hard to also change the market rates. And so let's just say if you have a really high mortgage, just because you have a really high mortgage doesn't mean you're going to be able to make all this money on the rental side of the coin. So you need to be really good with your numbers to say, okay, this is kind of what I'm seeing. Am I able to get it? And you could just run comps on Airbnb and AirDNA to kind of really gauge of like, this is coming in where I need to be.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Those listening to the show that might be newer investors or have listened to a ton of episodes and just haven't pulled the trigger yet. One of the fears is becoming a landlord and the chance that someone might ruin your property. What advice would you give them if they're looking to jump into real estate?
You got to get over that fear really quickly. Because people are going to ruin you, they are going to ruin your property. And you just look at the hotels, their properties get ruined all the time and they fix them and they're back up running very quickly. So it does happen. It's happened to me pretty bad a few times, but you roll with the punches and you just get back in there and put it back up.
So on a more, let's look at it in a more, maybe like granular outlook. So you really, for midterm rentals, to get a property ready to go, if something happens, you need your cleaners and you need your handyman, right? So what's one example you can give us that was easy to flip and get it back on its feet just by having the right people in place?
That's a good question. So for me, I don't know why I've had a lot of trouble with beds. Bed frames that we've had, they've broken a lot. The legs are shaky. So we've had to look into buying more stable beds. I don't know why. The kids are jumping on them. People are doing whatever, and they just break. So having a handyman that could replace it quickly or go and buy another bed quickly to rebuild it, that's the biggest challenge I've had with my midterms.
And with the beds, do you use a specific type of bed now, or you just kind of fit it to the theme of the property?
Now I do, but not that bed quality. It doesn't fit all my other themes. But for my midterms, yeah, it's a pretty standard bed now. It's a stronger, more expensive brand.
Well, if you want to share that with our audience, I'm sure they'd be happy to check it out in the show notes because they're probably looking for reliable stuff as well.
Yeah, I use RC Willie They're just a local furniture place here in Las Vegas.
Okay.
They're pretty solid. And it's not like I have this, this person's making the beds and shipping them to me. I just go. Like, time is efficient because the biggest problem with furniture is the shipping. It takes a long time. So you need to have a place that's ready to go. If you need something, boom, you could go pick it up and build it.
Sounds good. Any other challenges or solutions that you've kind of experienced and want to give advice through for midterm rental hosts?
So you have to be patient. And I see a lot of this where the people build it and they launch and it's 30 days in, they don't get any bookings right away, and then they give up. And they're just not patient. Like, this is a business that's going to go on for a while, long time. And so you can't just fold if you don't get the business right away. So let's say I see, I'll use this example. A buddy of mine, he launched his, he was putting it up for $5,000 a month and he wasn't getting it and he wanted to get rid of it. And I'm like, well, why don't you lower it to $3,000 a month and get some reviews and get some good... The best marketing is word of mouth, and other people will hear about how great your house is. And now that happened, and he's charging up to $6,000 a month, but he was ready to give up because that first month he wasn't getting the numbers he thought he could get. And I think a lot of people think that there's like this guaranteed number that you're going to get every single month, and it's not like that. It's not guaranteed. One month you could get it, you might not get it ever again. That's the game of this business.
Yeah, I think you you have to account for that when you're doing the math, right? You've got to account for some vacancy because you're talking about longer stays. You might have a same day turnover. You might have a couple of days. You might have a week, but you might have a vacancy that's a little bit more than a week. But I think what's important to remember is overall, even if you wait a month for the best booking, take that with a midterm rental compared to short-term rentals where you have a lot of like smaller gaps. And sometimes it can end up being the same or less, but you really can't panic. I have a good friend who has a property and it's been sitting vacant for about a week. And it's like, hey, that's okay, right? It's kind of an odd time of the year. It's going to happen. This is why we have profit built in. And you account for this, right? So even at the end of the year, if you end up with an entire month vacant, which I bet is pretty rare, that's still less than a 10% vacancy rate. So you're still occupied over 90% of the time if you have a full month that's vacant. So it's like, it might feel really bad, but number-wise, that's still doing really, really well. So just like, you're right, like keeping it in perspective, having a little bit of patience. And I always like to encourage people, well, like, don't just sit back and wait, right? You're not just going to sit and like wait for your phone to ding or your email to ding. You're going to get on Furnished Finder. You're going to tweak your listing, maybe change your photos. You're going to make sure your calendar's updated. You're going to message those unmatched leads. Like, I think that is a big difference between midterm and other strategies. It's like you can't just sit back, right? You need to be outwardly communicating and really working for yourself because that's the best way.
Yeah, it's a business.
It's a business.
It's not one thing you launch it and then that's it for the rest of your life.
It's not Jack in the Box where you just turn it.
Right, you have to work on your business.
Yeah.
A big obstacle that I see with people who do this is they get the money from a booking for a month or two, and then they go spend it. They don't save the money. And so my process and systems is I never spend the rental income on these properties. They have an account, one account per property, and I save that money. And I try to keep a year's worth of mortgage and bills per property, just in case, like that my properties could sit for a year. It wouldn't bother me. It would bother me, but I wouldn't get affected from it. And so I see a lot of operators, they make, oh, I made $10,000 for these 2 months. Let's go buy another one. Yeah. And then they get that vacancy and it kills them.
And that has to match your strategy, right? Because I think the higher end properties probably have a lot more fluctuation and they're a little bit more susceptible to kind of those swings. Versus if you have smaller properties, you might not need quite so much padding, but you need to make sure that whatever you have, that you're comfortable and you have that safety net, right? Like you're planning for it. So
100%.
I think that's, yeah, very good.
Yeah. And to go along with that, I think, one conversation that we've had is you like to pay down your properties, which not everyone has that same mentality. And like you have the buy and hold strategy. You think it's important that realtors are also investors. So let's put the realtor hat on for a minute. Why do you like to pay down your properties versus, you know, put that money towards other properties and the value of some of those important things to you?
So I like to have a safety net, and I always have to, I have to have a little something to the side. Like in poker, you can't always go all in. And being here in Las Vegas, I've heard stories. I've seen a lot of people who got crushed because they over leveraged an insane amount of real estate. And so what I teach is you want to have a big safety net. Mine is five properties. So my first five properties that I ever bought, I'm paying those off as soon as possible. And once they're paid off, no one could take them from me. Even if I make mistakes down the line, those five are a real big safety net. So my personal home was my first ever real estate I ever purchased. It's pretty much paid off. And now it's a midterm Airbnb, short-term rental, and it's bringing in $6,200 a month net. And so that thing's paid off. No matter what, I'm going to have $6,200 coming in pretty much every single month, hopefully for the rest of my life.
And you're not paying a mortgage.
And I'm not paying a mortgage because it's not, it's all paid off. And I'm seeing a lot of people, they do this mistake of, they refi, they take the equity out, and they just buy, and the interest rates are higher now, and they're not really making any money, and they didn't really get anything to show for those nice investments that they bought at the very beginning. So that's the way I do it. People argue with me all the time, but that's, I have more real estate than they do, and they're constantly in this hamster wheel of chasing and chasing and chasing. I'm not, I'd rather hit the single and double, to use a baseball analogy, and that's just the way I do it.
Nice. To the other realtors out there that maybe aren't investors yet, why do you think it's so valuable that they not only own their own home, but jump into the investment world for their clients also?
I think it's the silliest thing in the world. If you have a real estate license and you don't buy real estate, it makes no sense to me.
When I got into this business,
when I got into this business, I got my real estate license because I wanted to buy real estate for myself. I'm the best investor. I'm like the number one client for me. And then everybody else comes after me. It's selfish, but that's just the way it is. So I see a ton of realtors that make other people rich. And I'm like, it's so silly. Why are you making him rich for a very small commission when he's making millions and millions of dollars because he's a smart, patient investor? So what I teach, I'm actually going to teach at 4 o'clock today, partner with your clients. You're the most important piece in the whole transaction. You're finding them the deal. You're finding them the deal. Then you're bringing value of how to operate that deal and just say, look, if I bring you this deal, can you give me a percentage of ownership? And 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 out of 10, a good investor will allow you to do that because they can't find those deals. They don't have time. They're not in the game like you are. And so right. I've done a really good job of that.
Yeah. And tell us about Griggs University. What is your specialty you like to teach?
So I've been doing a lot of real estate, realtor education, of just the same game plan that I did. I just started buying rental property, I would sell real estate, and then I would use that income to buy rentals. And I would, every time I saved up $30,000, I would try and buy another rental property. And if I couldn't, I would partner with another investor to do it. And so Griggs University, I kind of used that, and then a lot of education on short-term rentals, especially in this town because of the rules and regulations.
Well, I think that's fantastic. I would love to leave you with the microphone to close us out here and let us know any other tips you have for folks using Furnished Finder to find tenants for larger, more high-end, any of these properties, like Kelly mentioned earlier. Some users get really nervous, and I would love it from someone as experienced as you to kind of give those Furnished Finder customers a little bit of advice on how to succeed with those larger properties.
You got to be confident in your product. If you're confident, like, damn, I got the coolest house, then you want to flaunt it. It's just like having a pretty girlfriend. You know, you got the pretty girlfriend, you want to take her out and show her around. It's the same thing with a house. So if you're confident in your product, get it out there. Put it on Furnished Finder. I'm a big fan of Furnished Finder. I think the network and the marketing is great. It does a great job for operators like myself to flaunt the properties. And what Furnished Finder does, it brings good quality tenants. And so it's a great marriage. You connect the two, and it's a good little business.
All right, guys, we've heard it all here today on the Landlord Diaries. Pretty sure you're ready to go out and roll the dice and get your next property. We're going to bring in all the Vegas terms to wrap us up. But Jason, we really appreciate you sharing your story today. I think it'll be a huge encouragement to others. And if you'd like to connect with Jason, of course, see the show notes. We'll have all the different ways you can make sure and get in touch with him. And I believe if you want to see and stay updated on the San Gabriel, it's got its own Instagram page as well. So thanks, guys. See you next week.